Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Hack My Homestead podcast. This is Sean Mills, and today is Wednesday, September 27th, 2023. And today we're going to finish up our review of the design principles of permaculture. So in our last podcast, we talked about the prime directive, taking responsibility for yourselves and that of your children. We talked about the permaculture ethics, which are care of the earth, care of the people, and return of surplus or fair share. And we talked about the first three design principles, which are observe and interact, catch and store energy, and obtain a yield. So there are 12 total design principles within permaculture, and we're going to cover the other nine today. So the one after obtain a yield is apply self-regulation and accept feedback. And so I think this one is very important because it requires you to set some limits to what you're working on and what you're doing. And I think it requires you to slow down enough to be able to see what's happening within systems and take that feedback and utilize that feedback to make the system better. And, you know, a good example of this would be if you put in a swale on a slope and that swale started catching and infiltrating water into the downgrade part of the slope, and that started creating erosion or landslide or mudslide issues. And so that would be a scenario where you would want to accept that feedback and identify that we need to either put some water-loving plants below grade to suck that water up, or we need to potentially put some sills into that swale to let the water flow out of the swale at certain places. Maybe we need to divert a portion of the water that's upslope of the swale to a separate swale or a different area, a drainage ditch maybe, to move water from where it's being a problem to where we want it to go. Lots of different things that you could do there, but the key is to accept that feedback and revise the design or update the design as it changes. The next one is use and value renewable resources and services. And so the idea there is that we want things where we put energy in and get, we talked about obtaining a yield, but we want something that is going to renew itself. We want to focus on perennials over annuals if we can for certain yields. We want to do things that increase biodiversity, things that, can be renewed. We want to utilize materials that are renewable versus single-use type materials. And talking about single-use materials, that takes us to the sixth design principle, which is produce no waste. Okay, and so the idea there is that waste is something that means we have too much energy in the early parts of a design, right? When we have waste, we have a product that we don't have a use for. And we need to identify ways to utilize those products so that they are not wasteful, okay? I was talking to a guy at the Back to the Land Festival last weekend, and he was a mushroom guy. He's doing classes on how to inoculate logs and sawdust and all kinds of different things. Very, very knowledgeable about mushrooms. And he was telling us about, you know, certain types of mushroom eat plastic. And I think that I had kind of heard of that at some point, but I didn't know if it was a real deal. And he actually went through like, oh yeah, no, you've got, you know, X, Y, and Z, and plastic is really just a long chain carbon molecule. Realistically, that's what it's made out of. And you've got certain types of mushrooms that will break those carbon molecules down. And I was like, man, you know, when you break it down and explain, and of course, I am not explaining it as well as he did. But when you explain it as well as he did, it really drives home, you know, all the opportunities that we have to take something that is a waste product and to create additional yields downstream that benefit the place that we're trying to rehabilitate or to build or to design. And so, you know, I've been doing a lot of thinking about vermicomposting toilets and how a vermicomposting toilet is going to be so much better for any environment where you've got human fecal material to process versus a septic system, which is what I have. Now, we all know that the sewer systems are just horrible. But even my septic system, you know, what comes out the end of that septic system and into the leach field is not great. It's not healthy. It's got problems, right? And this is why you have to do a perk test. You have to be able to, you know, prove to the government that your soil can infiltrate that stuff so that it doesn't come up to the surface and create a cesspool, okay? So everyone's in agreement that what comes out of a septic system is really bad, or they wouldn't have all of these hoops that you have to jump through to get a septic permit. So if there's another system that can be implemented where that material, instead of treated as a waste stream, is treated as a, you know, as a beneficial product that can be processed into something else. Okay, and so what I mean there is, in a vermicomposting, you know, septic system, the worms process poop and toilet paper, and essentially the byproduct of that is worm castings. The urine and other, you know, more watery parts of the waste stream get bound up in the carbon material that you filled, you know, in this scenario, an IBC with. Oh, and by the way, it's a recycled IBC, right? So we're utilizing a few of those permaculture principles to source the materials that we need. And then the water that comes out the end of that is very, very clean. Now, it's going to be pretty nitrogen rich at the beginning of the process when the process is working to mature. But you can utilize that. You can plant nitrogen-loving plants there. You could probably plant vegetables there. I wouldn't do root vegetables, but it doesn't have to be that. You could plant things like comfrey there and utilize that comfrey to make compost tea to utilize on the rest of the property. Okay, so the idea is that from this waste stream, we convert it into a resource producing item. Okay, and we should look at that throughout all of the things that we're designing onto our homestead. How can we take a quote unquote problem from one area of the homestead and turn that into a beneficial product in a different area, okay? And sometimes that means making different decisions on how a process is going to work or what's going to be, you know, what animal we're going to use, right, to do that work. But produce no waste is, I think it's a great one because I don't think it's one that will ever probably realistically, we'll never get to no waste, but as a design principle, if we design recycling or reusing what would be a waste stream back into the system, then we're following that principle. The next permaculture principle is design from patterns to details. And so what that means is that we observe what's happening on the property and we design how we're going to utilize the big pieces of the terrain or whatever. And then we design down to the details. So, for example, we might decide that we've got this nice, pretty straight on contour area that we're going to run a swale down to, okay? And so we want to start with where the water is coming from going into that area. We want to start with how deep or big the swale is going to be, how big the berm is going to be, where the seals are going to be. We start with the pattern part of it, where the water goes. And then we design all the way down to things like, what are we going to plant? What are we going to plant initially to stabilize the berm? What are we going to plant that will take a bit longer to actually grow, which is where we're going to get our yield from later on. We look at what kind of guilds we want to put together, and we'll get into guilds maybe in the next podcast. But, you know, we have water flowing, and we want to slow that water and infiltrate it into the soil, okay? And we want to do that along the contour. That's the pattern. And then we take that all the way down to the details of the system. The next one is integrate rather than segregate. And I will tell you, I really struggle with this one, because I like everything to be kind of orderly in the garden. I like my lettuce to be over here in rows, and I like my beans to be over here in a separate row. I like having areas that are dedicated to a specific purpose. But I know that is segregation of the system, and that makes every component in the system weaker. I mentioned guilds. So guilds would be different types of plants that we plant together that provide beneficial actions to one another. So we might plant garlic in the ground around an apple tree. And why would we want to do that? Well, because we know that the types of animals that like to chew the bark of young apple trees don't like garlic, don't like the smell of garlic. And so that helps, you know, prevent, some damage to those trees. Well, in my mind, I want to have a garlic area of the property, and I want to have an apple tree area of the property. And that's just not smart. It will make the garlic and the apple trees less vigorous. It will open them up to potential pest problems. And so, you know, integrating the different systems and components. And again, when we think about the ethics, or rather when we think about the design principles, they all kind of work, you know, together, and they balance each other out, and they, you know, it's not like you can just focus on one when you're working on a design. So, integrate helps us produce no waste, and it helps us produce a better yield, and it can potentially help us catch and store energy. And we want to observe and interact with that system, and we want to apply self-regulation and accept feedback of what we've observed. And, you know, like all of these things work together, right? So integration rather than segregation it's a tough one for me, I'll tell you. But I also understand why it's so important. So the next one is use small and slow solutions, okay? We want to make small adjustments and observe those adjustments and take the feedback and see what happens. And we want solutions that work over time. You know, we want to think about succession planning of, you know, maybe a forested portion of our property. A forest is a small, a forest is a large terrain feature, but growing a forest is a slow solution, right? So I might look at a section of my property and say, well, I've got some trees there that have some lumber potential, okay? So I'm going to bring some of those trees down, and I am going to, you know, dry those trees out, and I'm going to mill those trees. But in their place, or maybe in the stumps, I'm going to inoculate those stumps with mycelium and try to get some mushroom going in the area. And I might also plant some other trees. Once I've cleared a little bit of that overstory, I'm going to plant some trees that down the road will be productive. I might plant other trees that will be fence posts in the future. And I might plant those in another area, knowing that I might be able to get 8 or 10 trees that are fence post trees in the same area that would have been taken up by the overstory of the large tree that I took out. You know, but I know that it might be a decade before I'm able to go in and harvest those. Coppice management of woodlots is another one. Like, okay, I'm going to manage this system in a certain way that I won't see the benefits from for between 7 and 15 years, depending on, you know, the type of trees that I'm growing. So utilizing small and slow solutions, it allows us to, again, when I talk about all these different things working together, it allows us to actually have time to observe, have time to accept the feedback, have time to identify renewable resources that we can integrate into the system using more integration rather than segregation, right? And then the next one is use and value diversity, okay? We don't want monocrop. We don't want a bunch of one thing because that's not resilient. We want lots of diversity within the system. We want to have a diversity of how we go about managing the system, right? We don't want to use one tool. We don't want everything to look like a nail because all we have is a hammer. You know, and I've seen a lot of people get that hammer nail mentality around swales when they're thinking about putting in a permaculture design. And like, so my property is a bit hilly, and as I'm going through trying to identify, and I've owned this property for 11 years now, and I did a full permaculture design on this thing. I did a PDC and then designed my own property at the end of it like 9 or 10 years ago. Maybe 8 years ago. And then I sat back and I was like, you know, I don't really know if this is right. I don't know if I'm actually I don't know if I know enough to trust this design. And that's a problem that I personally have with kind of analysis paralysis. Like, I will use very, very slow solutions because I'll think about them for 10 years before I do anything. And so I'm really trying this year and next year to bust myself out of that and really, really focus on trying to get the main frame of the property, like basically agreed to what I'm going to do with it, so that I can start slowly implementing that design over time. And I've got like an acre right around the house that I'm focusing on right now. That acre, while the where certain things in that acre has changed a bit over the years, the what really hasn't. It's just been a matter of actually getting out there and doing the work that we need to do. I went way off on a tangent there. But yeah, diversity is key. We need different things in the system that do the same thing, right? And we need to make sure that all of our guilds don't look the same. We need to make sure that it's not a big old strawberry farm that we're growing, because that's not permaculture. The next one is use edges and value the marginal. I'm reading a book right now by Matt Hunley and Billy Bond called Scrapsteading. And initially, they were actually going to call that book Profits in the Margin, with the idea being that the edge and the margins are where the magic really happens in permaculture. And I really agree with that idea. You know, the edge is the forest edge is where you have the biggest diversity of plants. And, you know, the margins are where you can really ramp up productions. And that applies to a bunch of different things. So we could be talking about marginal, you know, let's see, what's a good example from the scrap setting book? How about food waste from, you know, institutions, right? That's kind of like a marginal input, but it can be insanely profitable to use that because they give it away for free. As a matter of fact, they normally pay people to take it away. And so, you know, looking at the edges in any system, whether it be a water edge, whether it be a forest edge, heck, whether it's the edge of a pot that we're planting in, there's opportunities to utilize, you know, what's being provided there. So the next one, the 12th design principle is creatively use and respond to change. And so as the system begins to mature and you are observing and interacting, you will start to identify how your changes to the livestock or the livestock to the ecosystem could be done with livestock, but you'll understand how changes are impacting what's going on. I think I heard a story one time about a guy that was farming in an area that was pretty like a lot of pine plantation in the area, and he was doing such a great job of infiltrating water and greening the area and really bumping the fertility of the area up that the pine forest started to success, because pine is like a pioneer species. Pine will come in when nothing else is there, when a big tree falls and opens up part of the overstory, or there's a big fire that clears out a forest, pine will spring up, and pine will grow for a while, and then it will success into, other larger trees. You know, an oak, for example, can't grow when there's no shade. A baby oak needs to grow up in the shade of, for example, a pine forest. And so he was actually forcing forest succession in his surrounding area because of what he was doing on his property, right? So one of the things you might look at that is, okay, well, if the pine forest is dying off, how can I respond to that change? How can I be creative in actually utilizing that change to my benefit, right? And then you just keep going. So I saw a presentation by David Holmgren one time, who's one of the creators of permaculture, along with Bill Mollison. And he looked at the principles as like the face of a clock. So like the 12 principles all correspond to the numbers on the dial of a clock. And what happens on a clock? Well, it just keeps going around. So you've got your principles, and you move through the principles, and it just leads you back to the first principle. And he also said, then if you take the ethics of permaculture and you put them in the center, then you can kind of look at that as a spoke and wheel approach, where the ethics are the hub, and then the spokes that go around the hub work together in tension and compression to create the strength of the wheel. And so I thought that was a really interesting idea. And when you think about the permaculture design principles, you really have to think about all of them together. Like, you can't just focus on one because, well, you know, it won't work if you do that. You know, you've got to observe and interact to make sure that you're obtaining a yield. And when you obtain a yield, a portion of that yield might end up being a waste stream unless you've taken into account the fact that you want to produce no waste. So you've already designed a system to utilize that waste. And so it just, it's a really beautiful thought process. And I don't know if anyone ever actually gets done with the design. I think what happens is that you just go to the next level. You know, you just, well, we've got a new change that we need to adjust to. We've got a new waste stream that we need to design back into the system to close that loop. And so I think that you've got, I just think that it, that if we can all kind of utilize these design principles to, even if we're not great permaculture designers, right? But it's not hard to understand these concepts. And so I think that if we all just make a little bit of an attempt to utilize the things that they're talking about within this design system, that we can create much more resilient and permanent systems for ourselves and for our family. And then we can become, you know, an example for other folks that want to do similar things and might not understand how to. So I think I'm going to wrap it up there today, folks. Thanks, everyone, for joining me on this podcast. If you've got questions or concerns or comments, you can email them to me at Sean, S-H-A-W-N, at hackmyhomestead.com. If you'd like to be added to the monthly newsletter, then just send me an email and I'll get you on the email list. And so I'm actually a little late in getting the September issue out, but I've got a couple days at the end of this week here where I think I'll get that hammered out and out to everyone. We've got several people that have emailed me about it, and I just said, hey, look, you know, I started the month out of the continental U.S. and then we had all the Kickstarter stuff going on, and so it's been a little bit hectic. And I'm actually recording this podcast from Alabama because about once a week I need to come down here and do maintenance on you know, the house that we're trying to sell. So fingers crossed, we're less than a month to our close date, and you know, assuming we don't have any problems and everything goes well, I will regain about a day and a half per week of productivity once this thing is sold. And so, well, anyways, again, thanks for joining me and we'll talk to you next time.